This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. Our radio show is heard on Pacifica stations nationwide, and you can watch our TV show on Free Speech TV and on our website. While Donald Trump wasted no time in enacting and enforcing his ban on Muslims from certain countries, the mass grassroots opposition to Trump's policies also wasted no time in mobilizing. Thousands of people gathered at major airports around the country over the past weekend, demanding that those individuals with legal resident permits or valid visas who were detained by Homeland Security be allowed into the country. At the same time, two federal judges ruled separately on Trump's Muslim ban executive order, granting a temporary stay on some aspects of enforcement. As a result, most, if not all, of those who were detained have been let back in. But the fight is far from over. Trump has dug his heels in, and many of his fellow Republicans are with him. My guest is Deepa Iyer. She is a senior fellow at the Center for Social Inclusion and author of the book We Too Sing America. Welcome to the program, Deepa.
Thank you, Sonali.
So the enforcement of this executive order seemed to sort of come through at stunning speed. Were you expecting people, particularly with valid visas and resident permits, green card holders, so-called green card holders, to be turned away at airports, and that happened so fast?
Right, absolutely. You know, I think that we knew around Wednesday of last week that there would be an executive order pertaining to what President Trump had called in his campaign a, quote, Muslim ban. And we also knew that there would be some provisions related to refugees. And given that he had already put out two immigration executive orders that are actually quite devastating. We had the impression, I think advocates around the country had the impression, that this particular one would be harmful as well. But you're absolutely right. The speed at which it was enforced almost immediately, and the fact that it extended not only to people with valid visas, so students, tourists, and the like, but also to green card holders, people who are legal residents in the United States, who at some level occupy a higher status in that immigration chain, was something that I don't think a lot of people expected. But as you mentioned in your intro, the legal community mobilized quickly, grassroots organizations mobilized quickly, and a lot of the tide has shifted over the past 48 hours.
I mean, green card holders are essentially citizens without the right to vote. And if you do get charged and convicted of a felony, you might be prevented from getting your citizenship in the future. But so you're right, they're essentially one tier down from citizens. Not too long ago, I was a permanent resident, a green card holder in the U.S. Millions of Americans have become Americans by first marrying U.S. citizens, getting their green cards, and then applying for citizenship. So it's very possible and likely that a lot of spouses of American citizens or parents or others sponsored by American citizens are going to get caught up in this dragnet if they happen to be from this set of seven countries.
Right, and they happen to have traveled abroad during this time period. I think that the data shows that about 500,000 green cards were issued to people from those seven countries in the past decade. So that's a lot of people that you're talking about that could potentially get caught in this dragnet, as you say. It is important to note that the Department of Homeland Security has walked back the sort of blanket provision for legal permanent residents. So there was an announcement from Secretary Kelly, I believe on Sunday, indicating that legal permanent residents are in the national security of the United States, right? They're in the national interest of the United States, and that the way that their cases would be adjudicated would be different. Having said that, there has been a lot of disarray and chaos at airports around the country. As you noted, there have been several federal courts, I believe up to five or six now, that have issued stays of deportation for either particular people or larger classes of people. But there has been a lot of uneven implementation by Customs and Border Security officials at various airports around the country who are not necessarily implementing or enforcing either the judicial orders or DHS policy in an even fashion.
And so you're right, this kind of chaos among TSA agents, Homeland Security agents who didn't really know what it was that was coming from on high points to how disorganized this administration is. I mean, if he wanted to enact an actual ban, they could have proceeded to go about it in a more organized way. They could have warned people. It just so happened that those people who were traveling got caught in the dragnet. If they happened to have their tickets for next week, they wouldn't get caught in this dragnet. What about those people who were sent back? We heard reports, Deepan, you probably did too, of some folks who had either a valid visa, I think it was valid visa holders, who were told to sign something that that would essentially make them not eligible to return to the country for 5 years. And if they didn't sign it, they would be deported and never allowed into the country.
Absolutely. There were a lot of instances where people were told information that was inaccurate, where people essentially gave up their rights. There are a lot of people who didn't speak English fluently or proficiently and didn't have access to interpreters. So this was definitely a situation that was a crisis situation. And it is disorganized, but it also is because of the fact that reports show that this executive order went through very little vetting internally within, say, the Department of Justice or the Department of Homeland Security. And so it was something that wasn't vetted properly within the government so that it could pass through kind of the checks and balances and other administrative checks that it needed to go through, wasn't communicated properly, and clearly it was not enforced well either. So we ended up with this crisis in airports with travelers, legal residents, visa holders, people sent back, as you mentioned, people signing away their rights without knowing it. It is definitely a crisis for immigrants. It's a crisis for the Constitution.
In some cases, there were children involved. There was a 5-year-old boy who was traveling with relatives waiting to see his parents, a 12-year-old girl who was not allowed in, parents and children potentially being separated from one another, students, scientists, people who had jobs waiting, who had gone through this, the extreme vetting process that is the U.S. immigration system in order to make it here. So let's talk about the incredible outpouring of support that we saw at the airports. Deepa, I was blown away. This wasn't the Women's March where it was months of preparation, lots of social media outreach. This was organized, put together just within hours or days, where at almost every major airport in the country, from Logan Airport in Boston to San Francisco Airport to LAX to JFK and even Miami and Detroit, thousands of Americans showed up. Wow.
Absolutely. And I do think that it is sort of that stream of civil disobedience and direct action and mobilization that we have been seeing for some time. When you look at, say, the movement for Black Lives and some of the protests that people were involved with, when you look at the Women's March, when you look at even the dismantling of the special registration program that advocates and organizers worked on in December of just this last year, we have been seeing a real national outrage at these policies, at the ways in which communities are being affected, and an outpouring of love and support. The reason that I think people showed up in the way that they did is because they understand that we welcome in this country immigrants and refugees, that is something that is important for the way that we live and the way that our country has been in many ways founded, right? And so that's not to say that we've always lived up to those values, and certainly we have not in many ways, especially since the 9/11 attacks. But I do think that there is a sense of outrage and the importance of valuing people and creating these inclusive communities that really drove people to the airports in full force. And we've seen this sort of resistance happen in various sectors as well, beyond just individuals. We've seen it in the tech sector, for example. You've seen CEOs of companies like Apple and Google and Facebook register their opposition. You saw the cab drivers who are unionized with the New York Taxi Workers Alliance, who left their shifts in New York City at JFK to protest as well. So we're really seeing sort of this national outrage and this outburst of support happen in various sectors all across the nation.
Right. Deepa, let's talk about elected officials. First, the Republicans and then the Democrats. Lindsey Graham and John McCain seem to be the two highest profile Republicans opposing the Muslim ban with a handful of others. And then you have the vice president of the country himself, Mike Pence, who just over a year ago called a Muslim ban unconstitutional and offensive. Governor Mike Pence of Indiana in December of 2015 tweeted, calls to ban Muslims from entering the U.S. are offensive and unconstitutional. Today, Mr. Pence is part of putting forward something that he has once called unconstitutional. Are Trump voters not seeing these double standards?
I'm not sure. I think you'd have to ask some of them. I don't know the answer to that question. I think that at some level, what is even more alarming is the fact that we're not seeing as much in terms of GOP opposition, right? You mentioned Senators McCain and Graham, but in terms of other rank and file members of the Republican Party, we're not seeing the sort of outrage that is being seen in their own districts, perhaps all around the nation. We are seeing attorney generals. There have been, I believe, 15 attorney generals of states around the country who have registered their opposition. We're seeing some bills being introduced in Congress that would stop this executive order, that would limit the executive authority of a president when it comes to immigration matters. We're seeing some calls into investigating the conduct of the Customs and Border Protection officers around the nation at the airports. So there is a swell of, a call to accountability, a call for investigations, a real call to stop this executive order in its tracks. Because I think the important thing to recognize here is that this is phase one of this executive order, right? We know that, there's a 90-day period, there's a 120-day period. And so we also have to be thinking about how we can make it untenable for the administration to actually move into phase two, because phase two is much worse.
There is an indefinite ban on refugees, specifically from Syria. That's the other part of it. And I'm glad you brought up the fact that this fight is far from over. It's just beginning. In fact, let's talk about Democratic lawmakers. And I want to actually play a video for you in our audience of first Elizabeth Warren, senator from Massachusetts, speaking at Logan Airport, and then Senator Cory Booker at JFK.
An attack on anyone.
An attack on anyone.
For their religious beliefs.
For their religious beliefs.
Is an attack.
Is an attack.
On the very foundation of democracy.
On the very foundation of democracy.
We will not turn away children.
We will not turn away children.
We will not turn away families.
We will not turn away families.
We will not turn away people who tried to help Americans.
We will not turn away people who tried to help Americans.
We will not turn away anyone because of their religion.
We will not turn away anyone because of their religion.
I believe tonight that momentarily the last of the people at this airport will be released. But telling you right now that tomorrow more people will be trying to come into our country.
Yep.
And what frustrates me is they are being singled out now simply because of how they have decided to pray and their country of origin. That has to be unacceptable to every American.
And that is Cory Booker. Before that, Elizabeth Warren, two Democratic lawmakers who showed up at the airport protest that took place over the weekend and spoke out. Deepa, how important are these expressions from Democratic lawmakers? Sometimes it seems as though the Democrats don't realize they're the opposition party that's needed now more than ever. In other cases, they do seem to speak out.
I think it's absolutely important that we see lawmakers, state, local, federal, show up at the sites of civil disobedience, that being airports over the weekend, and speak about their opposition to the ban on entry of people from particular countries, the ban on refugees. I think it's absolutely important that they raise their voices and that they go beyond that, right, in terms of either offering legislation at the federal level, calling for investigations, but also what we need to be seeing at the state and local level in order to make sure that these sorts of policies are not going to be implemented. Because in many ways, as we've been talking about, they really tear at the moral fabric of our country. They separate families. They totally diminish vibrant immigrant neighborhoods all across the nation. And they call into question what our Constitution actually is all about. So I do think that elected officials, policymakers at all levels of our civic society have the obligation to speak up right now.
Now, Deepa, what about the fact that these such orders are being pushed out so fast? I almost feel like if Trump had taken his time, taken greater care, that the country as a whole would have been caught off guard. You know, creeping fascism is much harder to respond to than the kind of bludgeon that he is hitting the country with. And in a way, it's backfiring, right? I mean, if he's going to do it, he might as well do it in a way that's going to wake up the maximum number of Americans, because we gave a pass to Democrats like Obama, who did things like deporting immigrants, you know, making it legal for U.S. citizens to be detained indefinitely, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's a good point. It honestly has felt like a juggernaut over the past 6 to 7 days. Every single day has seen a particular order that has affected certain segments of populations that, you know, we are connected to, right, that we care about deeply. And in many ways, it has served to be just over and over and over, like I think you called it a bludgeoning effect. And I think that a lot of activists feel that way in terms of being able to rapidly respond and to keep up with these executive orders. And they're not done yet, right? We know that there are more to come. At the same time, you know, if there is a silver lining, I think it is what you said, that it is waking people up. It is mobilizing people at levels that we have not seen before. It is really building a resistance movement in this country. And it's really calling into question for every single person, you know, where do you stand, right? Where are you on the line of justice and equity and equality and inclusion? And that we need everyone's voices in this moment to speak up, to push back, and to resist and to not normalize what is happening in our country.
And Deepa, the claim that Trump is making us safer by banning people from this list of seven countries, how much water does it hold? I mean, if we look at the sort of ways in which Americans are killed over the past decade, those who are essentially killed by radical Islamic fundamentalists are a relatively small number compared to, say, gun violence. Also, right, they don't all hail from the countries that Trump has targeted.
Absolutely. And we know also, if you just look at history, right, the book that I've written actually looks at the 15 years after 9/11 and looks at several policies that were implemented by both the Bush and the Obama administrations that were around this idea of preserving safety and security, and in many ways risking and giving up civil liberties. But we found time and time again that these policies, like special registration, like arbitrary interrogations and many more, surveillance, have basically become an ineffective way of practicing safety. We have wasted taxpayer dollars. We have not actually identified people with terrorist activities who may have been inciting danger to our country. And we have also diminished the trust between communities in Arab, South Asian, Muslim communities, and the government. And so part of what is happening here is this failure to understand history, this failure to recognize that just in recent history, the recent past, in the past 15 years, that we have examples of these policies that don't work. So yes, absolutely, these policies are not going to make us safer. And in fact, in many ways, they're going to incite this idea that the West is at war with Islam. And that will actually be worse for global security and global peace. Right. So there's, yeah.
Right. And the seven countries, by the way, just to put them out there, Iraq, Syria, Iran, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and Yemen, all countries that we have at some point had military actions in, and some that we are actively bombing. Interestingly enough, not countries like Saudi Arabia or the UAE, where people, for example, 9/11 hijackers were from, where the US is allied with, who buy weapons from us, and also those are the same countries that Donald Trump has business interests, such as golf courses, etc. Well, that I can imagine is not a terrible coincidence. Deepa, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Where can people find out more about your work?
You can look into my website, which is www.deepaiyer.com, and I tweet at DVIyer.
And we'll post links to that from our website later today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Sonali.
Deepa Iyer is a senior fellow at the Center for Social Inclusion, author of the book We Too Sing America. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can find our interviews online at risingupwithsonali.com and subscribe to our podcast on iTunes.